Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you one and all for being with us once again. It's always exciting and humbling to know that there are people all over the world listening to the show at some point in your week, because people listen to the recording whenever they can. So I'm very excited about our guest tonight. Tammy Beluszewski is a host on Empower Radio with her own show. She's an expert about relationships and prosperity, which pretty much covers everything that anybody is having a problem with. And we will be talking to her in just a few minutes after tonight's metaphysical musing. And boy, do we have stuff to muse about. Tomorrow night, Friday night. Well, Friday is Friday the 13th. So we've got the whole Friday the 13th thing, which I'll talk about in a second. And then it's also the full moon. And then Mercury is retrograde. So shall we take them one at a time or just freak out about it all at once? I don't know. So Mercury retrograde, I call my favorite scapegoat, because when Mercury is retrograde, anything that goes wrong, especially with relationships, contracts, technology, and money, and that kind of stuff, you can blame on Mercury being retrograde. So I love watching the posts on the various social media where people are whining about Mercury being retrograde. And I wonder what they do during the period between the retrograde moments, which don't last nearly long enough if you want to blame stuff on somebody. What do you do when it's not retrograde and stuff is going wrong? Part of Mercury being retrograde is also energy behind changing whatever it is that you're doing that needs to be changed and focusing on those changes. But we don't usually talk about that. It's so much more fun to blame Mercury being retrograde on messing things up. The full moon is always fascinating to me, because most people just know that it's got a reputation for stuff being strange and going on. And if you've ever done any kind of emergency work or worked in a hospital, especially a psych hospital, on the full moon, you can give personal testimony that it is definitely stranger and busier on the full moon than on other nights. But from a spiritual perspective, the full moon is the point in the monthly cycle when the veil between the physical world and the non-physical world is the thinnest. So in the monthly cycle, it's the full moon. In the annual cycle, it's Halloween. And in the daily cycle, it's after midnight. So the classic thing is, you know, full moon on Halloween at midnight. Strange things go on. But it's very likely that people who have any sensitivity at all will have some kind of interaction with things that they might not normally get in touch with, because it is a period when that's possible and more likely. Friday the 13th is an interesting one. And if you read about it, there are as many theories about why people are afraid of it as there are numbers. But the story that I think is true and that I appreciate the most is that back in the 1100s, 1200s, I don't remember exactly, the Knights Templar were a mystical group as well as being a very powerful army. And they had both military responsibilities and spiritual responsibilities, and they became independent of and more powerful than the Vatican, which had its own army. But they started getting very concerned about the independence of the Knights Templar. And on Friday the 13th, they did an action where the army of the Vatican found all of the Knights Templar early in the morning when they were still asleep and killed all of them. So ever since, Friday the 13th has been considered a very unlucky day. But I think that's only true if you are a Knights Templar or the Vatican's angry at you. So I'm not sure where the Friday the 13th thing really gets its energy. So here we are just before full moon on Friday the 13th during Mercury retrograde. And good luck. It should be an interesting evening, but it's one of those things where if you're paying attention, you at least know what to expect and know why to expect it. And that's what I hope I can give you when I talk about all this really odd stuff. And that's tonight's metaphysical music. And now we'll talk about much less odd stuff with Tammy Belaszewski, better known as Tammy B. PhD, which I think is wonderful. Hi, Tammy. Thanks for so much for being on the show.
Thanks for David. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Well, it's always fun when we turn the tables on each other on Empower Radio and interview the other hosts and have some fun. So what we do typically is, you know, say who you are and what you do, and then how you got here. You know, what's your story? What was the walkabout that you went through to get where you are now?
Okay, well, I'm happy to share my story. I'm very forthright in my books. People say all the time, gosh, you're so honest. Isn't that uncomfortable for you? And I'm like, nah, I cleared the shame. It's fine. I'm from a little town in Kansas. My dad was in the military. We moved around a lot. And I think it was in the second grade, my mom asked me what I was going to do when I grew up. I told her I was going to move to Los Angeles and I was going to marry a celebrity. And she said, I doubt it, but okay. And about 20 years later, that was my reality. I was engaged to be married to a very well-known actor. And I got everything that I thought that I wanted. But I wasn't happy. And I couldn't figure out why. Everybody's like, you're so lucky, you're so lucky, you're so lucky. But I was soul sick. I got everything my personality and my ego wanted, but on some deep level, my soul was not part of the equation. So I surrendered the relationship. He met somebody a week later and then married her shortly thereafter.
Yikes.
And I was kind of kicked to the curb. Yeah, I thought I was miserable then. Then I was really miserable because now I'm broke. So I was really brought to my knees. I was physically very ill. I was financially pretty much destitute because he just cut me off and said, you're on your own, and heartbroken. So I was really on my knees. Everybody left. There was no place else to go except for talk to God. And it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. So put me on a very different path and ended up in school, studied metaphysical material, became a hypnotherapist, studied polarity balancing, cranial sacral work, reflexology, found myself in a master's program for spiritual psychology, and started healing, got both feet on that spiritual path. And today, I'm now a holistic life counselor with two PhDs. I have written two books, Manifesting Love from the Inside Out, Manifesting Prosperity from the Inside Out. Happily married for 10 years. I live my dream home. I'm healthy. And now my passion and purpose is to help other people that are walking through that rough terrain, trying to transition from ego to soul.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's quite an adventure. That was quite the walkabout.
It really was.
And I
wouldn't recommend it exactly. You know, if you could be kinder and gentler with yourself through the process, I would certainly recommend that. But it was absolutely what I needed to do to get where I'm at.
And I'm sure you made, you know, you kind of breezed over all the studying that you did and all the degrees that you got. But I'm sure that was an adventure itself.
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was awesome. It brought me back to life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, my experience is that when you're learning to do healing things, you're learning them for yourself. And after you've cleared the stuff that you needed to clear with whatever it is you're learning, then you first become able to apply it to other people.
So. Oh, yes, the wounded healer, which I think is the most effective and maybe the only, you know, type of healer that there is.
Well, and even if you don't look at it as wounded, if you look at it as taking responsibility for healing the parts of yourself that need to be healed so that they're not in the way anymore.
Yes.
And you
clearing
can,
our own stuff.
So
we can
go.
Be a conduit, a clear vessel for others. And
right.
for me, for sure, you know, I walked through some rough terrain, so I know it pretty well. So I feel comfortable holding people's hands through it. You know,
right.
I feel like I'm a pretty good tour guide.
Right. And that's the other piece to it. People who have had an easy time and just went and got their degrees come up against people who are having a hard time. And the theory really isn't what they need.
I've been to counselors that were intellectually very intelligent, had all the degrees, but they hadn't been through the stuff that I was going through, and they didn't know what to do with me.
Right.
I made them very uncomfortable.
Right.
Yeah, because there's a lot of emotion with, you know, the grief and the tears, and it can be very challenging to sit in that energy unless you're personally familiar with it.
Right. I kind of do the same thing with people who are doing shamanic work and having their crises with that.
Yes.
Which is not quite as straightforward frequently.
That's a trip. I've had some shamanic journeys myself, and it's mm-hmm. So powerful. Yeah, that's some great work.
Well, and there's also, I don't know whether we'll get there because I want to talk about the way you do what you do, but there is the meeting point in the worldviews of what a psychological problem or a severe psychiatric problem looks like from one modality versus the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I work on people with a shamanic point of view and have the way that I see it and I conceptualize it. And when I get to talk to people who are using a more traditional Western psychological point of view, very often we meet in the middle and they go, oh, yeah, there are pieces that we don't know about.
Yeah, so, bridging the worlds.
Yeah. I worked in locked psych units 3 times. And it's trippy when you can see who the voices are that people are talking to
mm-hmm.
that are the reason they've been locked up.
Oh, yeah. That's fascinating. I'm going to have to interview you on my show.
Well, we can certainly do that.
Oh, I love this stuff.
Yeah. So, but let's talk about what you do. So you have 2 subspecialties, if you will. One is relationships and the other is prosperity. So where shall we start?
Well, we can start with saying that both of these things, whether it's love or whether it's money, it comes from the same source. And we manifest what we believe we deserve. We attract people that treat us the way we treat ourselves, and we make the amount of money that our subconscious mind believes that we deserve. So they're just different spokes getting to that same place. Although most of us have more of a challenge with one than the other. So that's why I have the relationship book and the prosperity book, because most people have a challenge with one or the other of these two subjects. But if you get to the core of it, it really is the same principles.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, not to jump past all of the process and say, what is the core of it? But what's the process that you use?
Well, there's lots of different techniques that I like to use. I do a lot of guided meditation and hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Going into those inner realms, which I imagine you know a lot about, David, and getting to the heart of the matter, getting to the core. We all grew up with parents that probably weren't enlightened masters. I can't say we all did, but most of the people I've met, that was the case for, and it certainly was the case for me. And what is handed down to us, our parents, as dysfunction is handed down to us, and it's perpetuated through generations. And say, for instance, you're sitting in your high chair eating your Cheerios and you see your parents get in a big fight. You may decide that love isn't safe. Or if they're frantic about money, you might decide that money is bad. We're all taught what to think about relationships and money by witnessing the people that raised us. Because none of us really had any thoughts or belief about love or money when we came in. We're essentially taught what to think about these things.
It's pre-verbal, which makes it even harder to get to.
Well, and David, then it gets even more complex because maybe we learned it in utero, or maybe we were bringing it in from a past life, and now these teachers or our parents are just perpetuating what we've learned from past lives. Right. So this is why I love going into their realms and doing the subconscious work, because we can get to some really core issues, bring that up into the conscious awareness where it can be transformed. It can be lifted and shifted and healed.
And this is the meaning of the scripture: the sins of the parents are visited upon the children.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's exactly right.
Yeah, we learn, even if it's not very conscious and very overt, we still learn what our parents' pain is and what our parents' dysfunction is. And we think that's normal because in our family it is.
It's all we know. Another analogy that I like to use that I think is it makes things very comprehensive is like we're all iPods. When we arrive on planet Earth, we're like little empty iPods. There's no music on us. We're just a fresh, clean, new iPod. Then our parents start downloading the material and the music onto us, onto our iPod. And that's what we play. That's what we know. And we're looking around going, well, I like that music. I like that music. Well, it wasn't downloaded onto your iPod. We can only play what's been downloaded. And so, you know, a lot of us, again, were raised by people that had their own fears and issues, and they did the best they could, but they projected their fears onto us or downloaded that onto our iPod. So in order to take the material out that you no longer want to play and upload new content, new music, new prosperous or positive messages, we have to tap into the realms of the subconscious. Again, that's why love, guided meditation, hypnosis, guided imagery, working the subconscious realms, because that's where real transformation has to occur before it can be reflected back to us in our conscious waking lives.
Right, right. The way I usually conceptualize it is it's spyware. We have a computer program that we're trying to operate. I want to be prosperous, or I want love, or whatever it is. And we set out in that direction. And then all this other stuff we don't know about is running in the background.
Oh, yes.
Stealing system resources, as computer people would say, but also running programs that don't allow the program you're trying to create to run.
That's a great analogy.
So I've always liked that metaphor of the spyware or malware programs, because there are so many really fascinating ways to approach that stuff. And so one of the things you were talking about was the guided imagery and hypnosis. I've done those not in the formal hypnosis way, which I don't know enough about not to be creeped out by it.
Oh, you can be a shaman, but you can't do a little hypnosis.
Well, not to denigrate your work, because I've seen some amazing work with hypnosis. It's just not something that that drew me in terms of doing the work that way. But it was some people using NLP in ways that seemed inappropriate, that kind of.
Well, that could turn you off.
Yeah.
I can see where you could make a decision around that based on that experience. Well, abuse of power is never a
right
thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. But, you know, in terms of the whole realm of going inside the imagination, however you get in there, and doing that work, all creative work is also done in there.
Oh, absolutely.
Einstein got all of his revelations, and he always said that he never got anything from his rational mind. He got it all from intuition, and he did it by playing violin.
Mm. And that nature, playing music, painting, meditating, guided imagery, it all takes you to the brain waves where alpha and theta reside,
mm-hmm. yep.
you know, and it's a very natural state. You know, you say it kind of creeped you out a little bit, but it's like, it's very natural, you know, to go in and out of these states all day long. The beta brainwaves are really good for, you know, focused, conscious intention. If you're, you know, in front of the computer and you're working or you're balancing your checkbook or you're doing accounting, you really need those beta brainwaves. But I think most humans spend way too much time with that monkey mind yes. running the show. So, and that also is where the energy of fear resides, in the conscious thinking beta brainwaves. And so right. it makes sense that if most people are there most of the time, that we're primarily a fear-based culture. So by virtue of going into the realms of meditation or creativity or the alpha and the theta and, of course, deltas when you're really just in deep sleep, that's when the wisdom from the deeper, higher parts of us can bubble up and come forward.
Right.
And then
right.
that's when, you know, I loved your analogy. Another one I use is like we see what we see on, you know, the theater, at the theater. But there's stuff going on behind the scenes that we can't see.
Right.
So it's like we need to lift up the curtains. We need to know what the Wizard of Oz is doing behind that curtain there, not just be distracted or too focused on just what we see. So going right. into those deeper realms and looking behind the scenes, that's where it gets really interesting.
And we'll talk a whole lot more about it after the break. But I like the idea of observing what's happening in your life and using that as the way of understanding what's probably going on in your subconscious, because
so
it's all
true.
Because it's all being outpictured.
Yeah, so, that's so powerful, David. That's exactly
instead of whining about it and going, "Why am I getting this? It stinks." It's like, "Oh, this is an interesting picture. Where did this come from?"
Yes, you're not a victim then. You're
right.
empowered.
Right. And then you do the messy work of getting in there and trying to release whatever it is that's in there.
Yes. Extract it from the roots up. That doesn't
work. So
that's some stinky stuff. We got to clear it out.
Absolutely. So before we go to break, let's make sure people know where to find you online.
Yes, my website is TammyBPhD.com. That's spelled with an I, TammyBPhD.com. And on Facebook, Manifesting From the Inside Out, Twitter, TammyBPhD. So I'm easy to find.
I know you are. I found you.
Yes, you did. Well, I think I found you, but it's all,
and what's
it's all
the
good
name?
How it worked out.
And tell them the name of your show on Empower Radio.
Journey to Center.
So, who knows? I may be on soon.
I would love it.
It would.
It's a compelling conversation.
It would be great fun. So, we will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller, with Tammy Belaszewski, the relationship and prosperity expert, who's going to solve all my problems right after the break.
We're going to do some hypnosis.
Uh-oh. I'm in trouble now. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
This week's episode, Fire at the Shed.
Gee, Johnny, this rope swing sure is swell. Don't I know it. Hey, it's Sassy. I think she's trying to tell us something. Mr. Gunderson? What about Mr. Gunderson? A fire? Mr. Gunderson's trapped? Where, Sassy? Where? What, Sassy? Now that you've got our attention, you'd like to take a moment to talk about shelter pets? Shelter pets in general are well-adjusted, healthy, and love being with people?
Sassy, we don't have time!
Pets often end up in shelters due to owner problems like divorce or allergies?
That's great, Sassy, but what about the fire?
There is no fire! You're just messing with our heads?
Sassy!
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
So Mozart knows these are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious
and so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes,
and soon you realize how impactful your kids' involvement in the arts can be.
They'll get better grades, make more friends, and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, sweetheart. Is my adorable grandson in school?
Yep, just dropped him off. Is your hair getting whiter, or is that paint?
Oh, I'm painting your room.
Did you take down my David Cassidy posters?
I painted over them.
Mom!
Just kidding.
Why were you painting my old room?
You had a purple room.
Moby Grape.
Well, we're upsizing. We're hosting a foreign exchange student from Cairo, a teenage girl.
What about me and your grandson?
I think it'll be a great experience for everybody.
We'll never see you. You'll be taking her to the museum and the zoo.
You know how great it'll be for little Ryan to experience another culture? He could learn another language, new customs.
I never thought of that. Got an extra paintbrush?
The time is now. Open up your life. Find out how to have a foreign exchange student live with you. Every family has something special to share. Go to HostStudents.org. That's HostStudents.org.
Ryan could learn to speak Arabic.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Tammy Belaszewski, better known as Tammy B, PhD, which I just think is adorable.
It's easier to say, too.
Much easier to say. So when last seen, we were talking about the various ways that you can get into the subconscious material and release it.
Mm-hmm. Got to make friends with the subconscious mind.
There's all the jokes about getting in touch with your inner child and For men, your feminine side and all the rest of it. And I won't make any of those jokes because anyway.
You're above that, aren't you?
No,
too mature for that.
No, I'm not. I'm just the host of the show.
I understand. We'll talk more about that after we hang up.
Exactly. So besides hypnosis, what's your approach in doing the work, and what are the different ways that you interact with people? Because obviously you have clients that come to you, but what other ways can people take advantage of your work?
Well, I do a lot of subconscious work through exercises in my book. So if people wanted to, you know, experience some of the different things that I like to do, there's exercises after each chapter in both of my books. One that I really love to do is from the Huna tradition. You can just relax, take a couple of easy breaths, and ask your subconscious mind to come forward as an archetype or a color, or it can be a person or an animal. And then just start to have a conversation with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's really quite profound. And if you don't know what to talk about, what you do is invite your higher self to sit there with you. And just imagine, you know, holding a candle or a purple crystal, and it can help clear some of the content in the subconscious mind. And it happens very naturally, very gracefully. And so that's something that people can do just on their own. And I've seen amazing things occur from this. And again, it's an exercise I love and have gotten, you know, such powerful information from. Another thing, go ahead.
Well, and for me, it makes perfect sense. It's a very shamanic approach to all of it. But for other people, the idea of talking to a part of yourself having conversations with parts of yourself sounds really odd.
It can, I suppose, to some people. I'm a big fan of Carolyn Mace, and she talks about archetypes. Something we studied about in school a lot were sub-personalities. Everybody has incongruent sub-personalities. You know, I have the artist, I have the healer, I have the inner child, I have Barbie, I have the nun. I didn't know about this. We're all kind of like a dysfunctional family. We all have really, you know, different aspects of ourselves. And if we're not aware of it, it's sort of like having a bunch of people in a kayak all trying to go a different direction. And then you just make a mess. You don't get anywhere, right?
Right.
So once you start becoming aware.
Actually, in a kayak, you wind up rolling over and all.
There's that all too.
I've had deep trouble.
I've experienced that energetically. I don't recommend it. So once we start to become aware that there are different motivating forces, I feel different when I'm going out on Saturday night dancing with my girlfriends than I do sitting at home painting or doing my radio show or writing the book. These are different aspects of myself that come forward and kind of sit in the driver's seat, if you will. Mm-hmm. And the inner child's a really powerful one. Carolyn Mace will say there are four archetypes that every human being has: the victim, the saboteur, the inner child, and the prostitute. So those are all really interesting aspects that really, they have a hold on us in physical world reality because it's about safety. It's about survival. So becoming aware of these aspects and starting to create relationships, if you will, can really smooth things out in our outer lives.
That's very interesting. I had not heard most of those expressed as archetypes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it makes you kind of wonder what is going on in your life. But I can totally see each of those as parts. But there are also positive archetypes.
I think all of the archetypes have, you know, potentially negative and positive attributes. The mm-hmm. archetype of the prostitute, for instance, people say, oh, well, that's really bad. It's not bad. And it's not necessarily, you know, sex for money. It's like, where is your line? Where do you sell out?
Right.
For, you know, to make money. Where is it that you do what you don't want to do because you need to pay your mortgage or eat or feed your kids? And we all have to deal with that. And again, you know, the prostitute isn't evil or bad or wrong. It's just wanting to make sure that, you know, we can take care of ourselves financially.
Right. Right. And it's well, it's obviously been connected to sex for a very long time, but that line of selling out, while it sounds like a very adolescent point of view, you know, I'm not going to give in to the man and or whatever the particular generational version of that is. The idea of growing up, it in many ways revolves around where that line is.
Absolutely. And I know, for me,
what are you willing to give up to get something that you think you can't get any other way?
Yes. And the manipulation and the game playing and the inner child can start to, the line can start to blur with the inner child because all of us, you know, learned about our value as a child. And if we weren't really supported and adored and loved and all those things, it's hard to know your deep value as an adult. And the same things we did as a child to get our needs met are likely the same things we're doing as an adult.
Right. And they probably are as ineffective as they were as a child because I don't know if everybody's childhood is like mine, but I got very ambiguous mm-hmm. messages or different messages from different people who were in authority.
Yes,
and
for sure.
So trying to figure out who you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to do and what works is really tricky when each of the people that you're dealing with has a different point of view and treats you differently.
Yeah, and a different opinion about who you should be.
Right.
And I don't know about you, David, but for me and for a lot of people I work with, both men and women, they have this people pleaser aspect about them. Some go the other direction of the rebel, but it's just ways of trying to take care of ourselves and survive. It's like, who do I need to be for you to approve of me? Boy,
right.
that was a tough one for me.
Right. I'm just sitting here giggling going, there's also a composite version, which is the people pleasing rebel.
Mm-hmm. There's that too, because then you've got the passive aggressive. Like, it's really interesting when you start, oh, and that was me. That was me to a T. You know, it's like, oh gosh, if I would just ignore my ex-fiance when he was my fiance and just love it when he chased after me because I felt like I had the power. But then one day he stopped chasing after me. Right. And I was like, what?
Where'd you go?
Now what do I do? My power play didn't work.
Right. Which is obviously the problem with almost all power plays unless you have all the power.
Well, and that's it. You know, there's a huge difference between power and authentic power.
Mm-hmm.
Authentic power comes from that connection to that something greater, knowing that everything you need will be provided from that source. You don't have to like grovel, beg, steal, lie, cheat, beg. You don't have to do any of that to humans because your needs are always going to be met from a higher authority. But it takes really cultivating that relationship.
Well, and that's one of the things I talk about on this show all the time is walkabout. And that's really what walkabout is about. What you learn is you go out with having left everything behind, carrying only a few important items, and you go out into whatever the version of the wilderness is in your culture and your moment, having no idea where anything's going to come from, and keep focusing on your connection to spirit and asking for what you need and asking what you're supposed to do next. And for however that happens, whether people get thrown into it, you know, hit rock bottom and manage to realize that they have a spiritual connection and work their way through it that way, or you do it as a ritual and you go off and do it, at some point you realize all these things are happening in ways that you don't understand, and that it does work and that you are connected. And
yes.
There was a gal who was interviewed on the show, Roxanne Musso, who's from Canada, healer from Canada. And she was on the show the first time 9 days before she left on walkabout. She knew she was supposed to go to Bali, Australia, and New Zealand, and that's all she knew.
Going into the mystery.
Yeah. And one of the wonders of modern technology is that I chat with her on Facebook almost every day and hear the story. And she gave us an update from Australia and was on the show again. And it's all stories of I didn't know where anything was going to come from. Everything looked like it was crashing. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And then this amazing thing happened. The person showed up. Somebody did a favor for no reason other than there she was and she's who she is. And they introduced her to someone else or, you know, gave her a Wi-Fi connection so she could go online and find something else. And she's been doing it. And
sounds like eat, pray, love.
Which I guess I have to see because everyone refers to it.
Well, yeah, it's going into the mystery and all you really have is, you know, what's right in front of you. And then it takes a lot of courage because you really have to dig deep and go into that place of faith and trust in something greater.
Right. Right.
You know? And it can be scary. It's the journey of the hero.
And it's ultimately what shamanic work is about. I always say being a shaman is standing in the middle of a level of chaos that has sent everybody else into the woods with their hair on fire and just looking around and saying, and what would you have me now do now?
Oh, and I love that, David. That's why my show's Journey to Center. It's about staying really in the center of the eye of the storm and the vortex.
Right.
And even
yeah, the
if
part
chaos,
that doesn't
you're connected.
Yeah, the part that doesn't get talked about is when you're told something that you really think you can't do, the conversation goes, really? You're kidding me. Is that going
to
work?
Oh, my gosh. I can so relate to that. It's like when I got that I was supposed to write a book. I'm like, what? I can't
right.
do that.
Right. You know, and it's all it's like all the Bible stories. You know, it's Moses and Noah. I love Bill Cosby's routine about Noah. You know, Noah, this is the Lord, Noah. Right. Who are you really? What do you want? I've been good. If you've never heard that, I'll send it to you. It's just
I have, but I would hear it again. I would listen again.
Yeah, it's just marvelous.
Terrible.
And it's that conversation when you've decided you will do it and you're not running, and then you still go, okay, we're gonna negotiate this. I still
I find myself arguing less about it now. I've really gotten to the place where I trust. If I get something, I'm going to be given the tools to do it.
Right.
And it doesn't scare me anymore. I've gotten out of my own way. Everybody in the kayak's on board and we're heading the same direction. And spirits at the helm. It's great.
Well, the thing with shamanic work is sometimes the stuff is dangerous and you're sitting there going, really, this is going to work? Oh, okay. So,
and you're worried about a little hypnosis.
You know, we've all got our issues.
Yeah, we wouldn't be very interesting if we didn't, would we?
Not at all.
Oh my gosh, so
you see people obviously in a private practice. You've got the wonderful books. Are there other ways that people can access you and your work?
Yes. If you go to my website, I'm giving away a report and a guided meditation. I have guided meditations on my site, I think like 14 or 15. I'm always making new ones to help people with whatever it is they want help with, connecting with the inner child, removing the blocks to prosperity, manifesting a relationship, claiming the body, the healthy body that you want. So, if people want to sit in the comfort of their home and listen to guided meditations, some pretty powerful transformation can occur just by virtue of that. I also have an ebook on my website that's free called Making Friends with Your Subconscious Mind, which I think is such a big piece of the healing puzzle. And so there's a lot of information and exercises in there about how we can do that. I'm going to be doing a teleseminar pretty soon. I want people to hang out with me, call in with their questions, interact with them, and maybe do a little bit of a guided meditation at the end of that. And then I'm planning on doing a teleseminar series coming in the fall and eventually a video one. So I also want to do some YouTube things. Just give people little, bites so that they can start turning the steering wheel the direction they really want to be going in their lives. Because most of us don't heal, 100% overnight. You don't want to put like a 220 and a 110, with the electricity thing, you'll blow your hair off. So I find it's better to heal in small steps, consistent steps, and incrementally if we want to get to that place of, just peace and grace.
Well, that steering wheel metaphor, it's very powerful because there's a physiological thing connected to it.
Uh-huh.
If you're driving your car and you're heading towards an obstacle, what most people who are not trained do is they look at what they are going to hit and say, oh, my God, I'm going to hit it.
Oh, that's true.
What drivers on racetracks and, police and evasion drivers are taught to do is look where you want the car to go. And your body will turn the wheel and do all the things it needs to make the car go where you're looking.
That's fascinating.
So
I didn't know that, but that's a good analogy then.
Right. And obviously is the way everything works. Wherever you're looking, whatever you're focusing on.
Whatever
is
you're paying attention to is the direction you're going.
Is what you get. So it's look where you want to go.
Absolutely.
That's, kind of people talk about hitting the wall. The reason you hit the wall is you didn't go somewhere else. You could have turned.
Be profound, David.
I try.
It's true. I just say things. Well, I'm not a race car driver, so I guess I wouldn't know. But, our thoughts and our beliefs create our future. So if you don't like what's going on in your life, set the intention to start thinking differently. People are like, well, I can't. He broke my heart. I can't think of anything else. Okay, indulge yourself for a couple minutes, then change the channel. Start envisioning that future that you want instead of complaining about being broke and not being able to afford, what you want for dinner. Start saying, I'm prosperous and I'm grateful. And look at all the things in my life that represent prosperity. If you have a roof over your head and you have enough food, you're more prosperous than 90% of the people on the planet. Start focusing on what you're grateful for. And that creates an energy of receptivity and a vortex to attract even more to be grateful for.
Right. Yeah. One of my expressions with my daughter when, something is less than perfect, and there are so many things that are, is that's a first world problem. In the third world, it wouldn't even be there to be a problem, and the problem mm-hmm. would be not getting eaten and finding enough to eat.
Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We're kind right. of at the right. top or so, the know. Upper part of the top part of the triangle here.
Right. So Netflix not loading well this evening is really not something worth whining about.
In the overall scheme of things, let's put it into perspective. They put anchovies on my pizza. Well, that is dreadful.
Right. You know, there are some things that you just refuse to eat, but
yes.
you have pizza.
It's so funny.
You have pizza. Yeah. So, you know, and it's all habits of mind. It's not that she's, you know, a whiny kid, basically, or anything. She's just a kid. And I'm like, this is frustrating. And like, yeah, so.
Well, and we know what we know. If we've been very well taken care of in our lives, I see this a lot with friends who are well-to-do and their children, you know,
right.
the bar has been pretty high their whole lives. So it's hard, you know, it's like my grandmother would say to me, you know, I had to walk 2 miles in the snow to go to school. You're like looking at it like, there's no relatedness. I live in California.
Well, although when my daughter was going through freshman year and her first semester, she had a horrible Wednesday. It was straight through 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. with 2 half-hour breaks where she had to get from one place to another. It really was one of those, oh, my God, how am I going to do it? Mm-hmm. And it was exhausting. And I let her go for a while. And then I said, you know, all those stories I've told you from college mm-hmm. that always end with uphill into the wind. Both ways, barefoot in the snow. This is yours.
She can relate now.
This is yours. You will learn that you can do this. You will figure out the tricks. It's only for one semester. It's only one day out of your week. And you'll work it out. But this is your story and your challenge. And here you are. And she was like, oh, right.
There you go. Now it made sense. It came into mm-hmm. focus for her. And we yep. all do, David. We all have those challenges and we think nobody else can relate. But it's part of the human experience. You know?
Right.
We all have those times of feeling disconnected and abandoned by the universe. And things are so hard. But if we can look at it like an opportunity rather than a victim, then that can change everything.
Right. Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, what else do you want people to know about your work? Because we're, as always happens, we're having a fascinating conversation and we're running out of time.
Well, another tool that I think is just remarkable and incredible, something that's really been supportive in my healing process, is painting mandalas, drawing mandalas, painting mandalas. I used to struggle a lot with anxiety and tried every medication known to mankind to assuage that anxiety, and nothing worked. Meditation helped, just getting quiet and letting the monkey relax for a while. And then one day in school, they told us we were going to draw mandalas, and I had no idea what that was. And I sat on the floor with newsprint crayons and drew circles.
Mm-hmm.
Mandala actually comes from the Sanskrit language and means sacred circle or container of essence. Carl Jung brought it to the West and said it's the archetype of wholeness, and he thought it was the ultimate healing tool. He stumbled on it when he was in his 30s, and Freud kind of kicked him to the curb, and he had a psychological breakdown. And he started dreaming of circles and orbs, and then he started drawing them, and somebody gave him a book from the East called The Golden Lotus. And he's like, oh, that's what this is. So right. he started creating them. And he said, by virtue of creating them, you pull all parts of yourself home. You invite all parts of yourself home. So a lot of subconscious healing work can occur by virtue of drawing them, coloring them, painting them. So I have a gallery of them on my website, Tammy B. PhD, if you go to Journey to Center or the gallery. And it really is just a remarkable healing tool that even if it seems like it's silly and it's a waste of time, it's healing you. It's working
right.
Behind the scenes. And it's completely transformed my life. I thought it was a waste of time. I would spend 10 hours drawing these things. And somebody's like, you have to paint that for me. And then I started painting them. And then I started making money at them. And now mm-hmm. I teach the classes. And it's incredible to witness people's transformations by virtue of the creative process.
It It's interesting. I taught at a convention this weekend, and I was teaching something pretty much unrelated. And one of the things I did was circle the various things that were coming up in this process of getting information. And I realized in the moment, and I talked to the group about it, that what I was doing was creating miniature altars on which I could do the healing work on that particular thing that needed to be done. And it was just, you know, me scribbling on a piece of graph paper. I was doing it on the board. But it's creating a proxy for the circumstance in the universe that you want to focus on.
Absolutely.
Enclosing it in a circle.
Yes.
Creating an altar there into which you can do whatever you need to do. And there's theme and variations of that in traditions all over the world. So it's very, very powerful stuff.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And one of internally the most, and externally.
Yes. And that's how it works, you know, as within, so without.
Yeah.
One of the most powerful aspects of doing the mandala is setting your intention for what it is you want. Like I did a mandala for prosperity, which is now the cover of my prosperity book. I did a meditation to manifest love. You can set the intention, ask your heart or higher self for the perfect healing symbol for you, and then just trust what colors come forward and what shapes come forward. And sometimes I see the whole thing in its entirety. Other times it's just, I just know where to start.
Right.
And then I just let it unfold step by step by step. And it's always an amazing experience. And I had a friend who did this for somebody who was suffering with addiction. And he was deep into the alcoholism and she was worried about him. So she did a healing mandala for him without telling him.
Right.
And she sent it to him. And before he received it, he said, you know, I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to go.
It's amazing how that works.
Before he even got the mandala. It's incredible.
Right. No, I totally understand. Tammy, we're running out of time. We're just going to
don't
do this.
Oh, no, don't say that.
We're going to have to do this again.
I would love that. You're fun.
And so are you. So we really should do more of this. So my guest tonight is Tammy Balashewski, better known as Tammy B, PhD. And her website is Tammy B, PhD.
PhD.com.
And she is also a host here on Empower Radio. Thank you so much for being with me. This was great fun.
You are cute. I like you.
Aw, thanks. And if other people decided I was cute and want to know more about me, you can find out more about me at househealing.com. And on the contact page is every conceivable technology known to modern man for getting in touch with me, including my calendar to schedule a 20-minute free conversation to assess what's going on with you and how my work might be helpful. And I work with people, places, businesses, all kinds of situations, clearing works for all kinds of things. If you want more information about the show or the show archives, you'll find it cleverly hiding at thefarkasfiles.com. And you can also find all the Empower Radio shows on iTunes podcasts, iHeartRadio, and a whole bunch of other streaming audio systems that I don't have a list of. So you can find us many, many different ways. So you can listen very conveniently. And it's really exciting that people do listen all over the world when it's convenient for you. So here we've had another wonderful evening. I hope you enjoyed your time with us. I certainly had a great time. Until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. On Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.